together with the impact of that stagnation within the ranks, is a major contributor to the cost of human resources within the Department of Defense, and more specifically the South African National Defense Force. And it limits the available forces to be employed and deployed in military operations. So when we take a broad stroke and a broad view of what has happened in the space of the compensation of employees, the composition of soldiers, the ability of the SANDF to project itself in military operations, we find that there's a particular interplay between the underfunding of defense, and more specifically the compensation of employees, stagnation throughout the system, and its inability to replenish personnel losses further hamper the conduct of military operations as we move through, as military operations also diversify. With that in mind, we cast our immediate attention to the implemented interventions was initiated by both the Portfolio Committee on Defense, the National Treasury, as well as the Department of Defense. And together we decided on a course of action to curb the HR costs that had have incrementally increased the deficit within the department's allocation. And one of the HR interventions contemplated and successfully implemented was an exit strategy, but it wasn't any exit strategy. It was a funded exit strategy as part of the interventions applied by the department, and subsequently to the agreement in 2021 on what to do to curb the cost, the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans has issued internal instructions to comply with the intent to curb cost. And in so doing, propelled by the funded strategy of exiting soldiers, the department was allocated 1 billion rand for 2022-23 financial year, 800 million rand for the 23rd and 23-24 financial year to service the GEPF liabilities. And in throughout the whole process, we kept a tight rein on how we went about to implement this exit strategy. And we submitted exit plans and we submitted quarterly reports alongside the conditions implemented for the funding of the exit strategy as contemplated by the course of action. And the DoD has successfully implemented this funded exit strategy called the Mobility Exit Mechanism, or MEM in short, for soldiers. And in 2022-23, the exit plan called to separate 1,548 soldiers, and we managed to separate in that financial year 1,260 soldiers by means of the MIM at a cost of approximately 990 million rand for severance and paid 53 million rand to service GEPF liabilities. And in 2023-24, the exit plan called for 1,228 soldiers to be separated. And to date, the minister has approved the separation of 1,289 soldiers, or alternatively 105% of target. And it's projected as the soldiers separate throughout this financial year up until the 31 March 2024, that the projected cost for severance will be 1.2 billion rand, and cost to service the liabilities of the GEPF, 818 million rand. And so this demonstrates the resolve of the department to pursue the implementation of HR cost savings measures as contemplated and agreed to, but more specifically on the trajectory of future managing our compensation of employees' expenditure. But in executing the exit strategy for the last 2 years, it did not always go as rosy as what we intended or planned. There were delays that materialized as a result of the number of separations, 1,260 within 2022-23, and now 1,289. And internally, the structure of the administrative function to manage the separation of soldiers is very small, And delays were caused there. But there were also other delays. And that delays extend to the GEPF being able to generate invoices in order to pay for the DoD to pay the liabilities to JEPA. So with that in mind, JEPA, the Department of Defense and National Treasury have applied themselves to fund the separation costs that contains both severance and GEPF liabilities over time. And it has made significant progress to work out the delays internally as well as to be able to receive GEPF invoices as quickly as possible. So the current exit strategy applied criteria, and that criteria, keeping in mind the rejuvenation requirement, focused on the long-term service system members within the South African National Defence Force. And to explain, the long-term service system is an employment system that is an employment system and a contract to serve until age 60. And other criteria applied was to apply age, the criteria for soldiers aged between 50 and 58 years old, and it targeted specifically the senior NCO or warrant officer class 1 and 2 and staff sergeant level, NCOs, non-commissioned officers, and the least of the officers' corps to be separated by way of this exit mechanism. And it prioritized in the profile of the human resources and its occupational bands, it prioritized combat and combat support occupations to separate based on all the previous criteria discussed. And so one can easily get lost and say, but what is the target? What was the performance target? What was the result of implementing just in the last 2 years a funded exit strategy? And the performance is listed before you as being a decrease of the average age of soldiers by 1 year. It caused a progression through the system for the rank levels private to lieutenant colonel, curbing stagnation. And therefore, it had a great impact on the stagnation of personnel. And it increased the attrition rate, being attrition composed of normal attrition, like resignations and retirements, and induced attrition, the exit mechanism, to a level of 4,924, as accounted for from September 2022 to September 2023. And it created then, as a result of this induced attrition, additional attrition, it created vacancies of 2,549, which speaks now to the rejuvenation or the personnel loss replacement rate that such a exit mechanism has brought about, being an MSDS intake in January 2024 and a planned intake for January 2025. And it also then had an impact on the force strength capacity of the South African National Defence Force, reducing it to 59,249 as on September 30th of this year. So easily, we can see that there's value in implementing a funded exit strategy for soldiers. It makes sense. It contributes to the rejuvenation of the SANDF. It creates vacancies, mobilities through the rank and through the system of the South African National Defence Force, and it then creates lower level occupation vacancies. But when we cast our mind and we look forward to the proposed permanent implementation of a permanent exit strategy, we must first then ask what would be the deliverables of such an exit strategy, a funded exit strategy that will be implemented in a more permanent fashion. And the first is it has to do something about the force strength management. One should never lose sight of the fact that the SANDF conducts successful military operations and it seeks to maintain that track record. And in order to maintain that track record, the number of military operations that has currently increased and even diversified requires soldiers. So what the permanent exit strategy must make provision for force strength management, seeking to make more soldiers available to be employed and deployed in military operation. But it must also give us the ability to accurately plan the force strength within an MTEF and MTSF, making our projections on our compensation of employees more accurate, more worthy of the SANDF, requiring a human resource at a certain cost, and hopefully it is less. And it will then also contribute to the force strength distribution, because as we separate members and as our members move through the system and as new members and recruits join us, the force composition, the interplay between combat, combat support, support, technical and professional musterings or occupations needs to be fashioned in a balance and not be unbalanced as it is at the moment, making the least number of soldiers available for operation. And then it also needs to deal with the composition of the force and the strengthened application of the force generation rules as it may be applied. And then ultimately, over time, lowering the cost of human resources, contributing to the fact that more soldiers and younger soldiers will cost less. So with that deliverables in mind and projected of implementing a permanent exit strategy, what then are the attributes of our current force composition? And we list three major factors that should that governs the implementation of a permanent funded exit strategy. And the first being that our current force composition denotes that it is an older force and it's an aging force. And we also then note that the current employment systems of the SANDF have a significant contribution to the cost of human resources. And these two factors have a definite adverse and a constrained impact on the force generation in order to conduct military operations. So when we focus on our attention on the aging force, we note that the average age of the force strength is 41 years old, 1 year less as a result of the exit strategy implementation. And it's indicative that our combat and combat support occupations and roles are also then older, and therefore more of these type of personnel are not available for military operations employment and deployment. We also then note that employment systems like the long-term service system, which is a lifelong employment system, taking a soldier to age 60 and retirement, is currently being phased out on the basis of normal attrition. But once you compare the long-term service system personnel with contract-based employment system personnel, we find that the long-term service system personnel cost us more, significant more, than a contract-based employment system. However, given all the factors and all the constraints in the space of the state having to suffer through an adverse fiscal period, as well as the Department of Defense being funded below its current strength, those constraints have a significant bearing on managing contracts within the core service system of the new service system implemented by the Department of Defense and the South African National Defense Force. One should note that the Department and the South African National Defense Force has already considered that it would be more advantageous to manage contracts and be able to upscale and downscale the number of personnel on scale on strength as per our plan in order to limit costs. But this current core service system, contract-based employment system, is now steadily being eroded, and it constrains the operational tempo of the SANDF. And these two factors play a significant role on force generation to make an HR capacity available to be employed in military operations. So when we know what is the deliverables, we understand the current composition of and attributes of our workforce within the South African National Defence Force, the proposed exit strategy must also then give us the ability to approach it from a certain angle with all the things that we have learned up till now playing its part. So what the Joint Standing Committee on Defence will note and understand that at the cost of 1 billion rand, 1,260 military personnel was separated in a space where government have limited financial resources. And so a permanent exit funded exit strategy must first look at an applied reduced tempo. Maybe not so many people so quickly. Maybe it's more appropriate to limit the number of military separations per financial year. And if that is then the case in this approach to our permanent exit strategy for soldiers, we then also then can apply a reduced pace of an exit mechanism, meaning it can be sustained over a longer period because we limit the number of exits. But and there is an upside to that, because we would not be creating significant HR gaps within the requirement for military operations, as well as in our training system, if both the reduced tempo and pace principles are applied. But more importantly, it needs to be more affordable. At the rate of the recent funded strategy implemented within the South African National Defence Force at a cost of 1.8 billion rand to separate approximately 2,500 soldiers, we find that government is currently experiencing an adverse fiscal situation, and to ask of it of government to fund more within the space that of constrained fiscal situation, it must make more sense that any permanent exit strategy must be affordable and even incorporated into the budget and or allocation to the defense once it reaches the year four. It also needs to be more manageable administratively within the department, because all types of separation administration goes through one entity within the Department of Defense, and it will lessen the burden within that entity to be able to manage the administrative process. It will also then enable the GEPF to submit timely invoices that is due and payable as a result of a soldier separation by way of name. And when this approach finally comes to fruition, is that we have to then consider bringing back and revert back to an annual MSDS intake of approximately and up to 4,000 recruits to reach a maximum intake level in the system of approximately 8,000. And that would be contributing to a sustained rejuvenation of the SANDF as we implement a permanent exit strategy at a reduced tempo pace. It's more affordable, more manageable, and it delivers results to recruit more young soldiers. And this annual intake was already formalized and submitted as part of government adjustment budgeting process for 23 and 24 MTEF period. And the department have submit funding proposals to implement, to continue to implement an exit strategy for soldiers at an approximate cost of 600 million rand per annum to separate about 330 military members per annum as we move through the time. And then when we have all done all of this, the contribution to rejuvenation would be significant. And So one can understand that all the constraints that the department has suffered, underfunding the whole allocation to defense, more specifically the compensation of employees, it has brought the department to adopt two specific broad approaches to a rejuvenation with specific adverse implication on the SANDF abilities. So the first is to replace personnel losses according to attrition. And one should be very aware that prior to 2016, the SANDF recruiting strategy was able to feed the reserves on one hand, but also satisfy personnel losses in the regular force. However, due to the financial constraints emanating from the adverse fiscal and low economic trajectory of our country, we are no longer able to do that. And as a result of implementing this broad approach, it has halted the rejuvenation of the reserves. And that has a particular impact on the reserve profile, being the reserves are now increasingly become more aged, and their numbers are consequently also being depleted as a result of not feeding them. The second broad option was adopted as part of the HR interventions to curb HR costs. The strategy called for a recruitment or personnel loss replacement within the SANDF every alternate year. And that has contributed significantly to the reduced force strength that we now find the SANDF to be. All to do with curbing HR costs. And therefore, if we are to implement a permanent funded exit strategy, it needs to be so effective and paced that it significantly can contribute in the short and over the medium term to the rejuvenation of both the reserves and the regular force as we move forward. And it must be able to avoid HR creating HR gaps in the system, and it has to be a funded exit strategy. So in conclusion, it has become evident that without a secure funded trajectory for defense, that the DoD and the SANDF would be hard-pressed to implement measures to effectively manage its human resource needs and costs. And a course of action to institute a permanent exit strategy for soldiers at an approximate cost of 600 million rand per financial year would assist the department, as more specifically the SANDF, to effectively manage its force strength, its distribution, composition, and composition within the defense allocation as determined by government. That concludes the presentation to the Joint Standing Committee on Defense. I hand over to Chief Human Resources. Thank you.
Chief, thank you very much, General Richards. Over to you, Chief HR. Just to wind up the presentation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, members of the Joint Standing Committee of Defense. Chair, you can see that we started obviously with where we are in terms of the exit strategy that we introduced 2 years ago and some of the interventions that were presented to yourselves. We are comfortable that the current MEM that we implemented has made, you know, a significant difference in terms of the human capital in the department in terms of reduction. Yes, we have not seen anything that talks about the savings per se, as we were obviously not funded in terms of the severance. The Treasury only paid for the GPF liability, so the severance was coming from the department. But once we have passed these 2 years and we are now moving to the normal exit intervention that we always have, and we go to the lesser numbers like 300 as we're proposing, we will start seeing that the money that we're spending on severance will also go down, and the department will start seeing a significant difference in terms of the reduction on the COE. These 2 years, we have not seen that, but I'm comfortable that once we move outside these 2 years, there will be a difference in terms of the compensation of employees. We need to continue with the exit of our people so that we don't retain the people that we can exit, so that we rejuvenate. Our approach is that exit at the top, rejuvenate at the bottom, so that we've got number of people that are deployable soldiers, and sailors, and airmen, because that's the only time you rejuvenate. So that's the permanent exit strategy that we talk about. We'll talk to that particular approach. We can now, Chair, entertain the questions and clarities on the presentation through the minister. I think the minister will be facilitating this process. I submit. Thank you.
You're muted, Chair.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy that we can come this far and we can all see where we are going, as opposed to the last time where, the colleagues were thinking that maybe the situation would improve in the near future. Now we've realized that the situation is not likely to improve. I'm talking about the fiscal situation in the country, and therefore we really must tighten our belt and do everything humanly possible bring the expenditure within control, so that the Defense Force is able to do more with less. And it was projected that by 2025-26, the MEM would start to show some savings. But I'm now not pretty certain with the underfunding that we will reach the SNDF will break even and start to post some savings in 2025-26. Maybe you also need to reflect on that as well, because when the MEM was first conceptualized, or when you started implementing it, you had a different set of conditions. I'm sure those conditions have changed now. Usually, you take the decision and make the projection and say everything equal. Can we still say everything is equal? And that would be able to meet the targets at the time that we had plan to meet the targets. I'm not quite certain. So that we are then able to measure our expectations accordingly. And Mr. Mare, over to you. I see your hand.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chief HR, for the presentation. I was studying this presentation before, and then I made a couple of notes. And I'm asked myself, what is the real purpose that we have got with the strategy? What is the real objectives? Is it to decrease cost of employees? You have referred to that. Is it to decrease cost of employees, but to retain the numbers? Or is it to reduce the numbers as well? Because to retain an average age of around about 40, and retain the numbers, this presentation, I cannot see how we will cut the cost of employees. We know that we have already been about 70% with the overspend, the yearly 3 billion rand overspend. We have about 70%. So we need to see a significant reduction in the monetary value of the cost of employees. Even the numbers that has been referred to here, 59,000, for quite some time, the numbers was around about 60,000 with about 10,000 for civilian employees. So in other words, we don't see any reduction in any numbers of soldiers here. In fact, I mean, there's a case being made out that, yes, we must bring in more MSDS, but we must basically halt a bit with the MIM of the permanent people. That means that numbers will increase. That means that cost will increase. So I cannot see how we will reduce the cost here. I just want to mention, it said that since 2017, there's been a pressure on cost of employees. I've been in the previous parliament. During that parliament, there was already a huge pressure on cost of employees. It was during that time that the funding from the SDA was used to fund the cost of employees. So there's been you'll also remember it's during that time that there was an offer from National Treasury to cut the cost of employees. It was a once-off offer to all state departments. Department of Defense and SANDF has opted not to make use of that. That is biting you in the leg at the moment. I also cannot understand in the slide 3, it says here that stagnation in ranks is a major contributor to HR cost. How can stagnation contribute to cost? Stagnation means that you don't move from a lower rank to a higher rank, which is more expensive. So how do stagnation in ranks add to higher employee costs? Maybe you must explain that to me, because I do not understand that. It doesn't make sense to me. Then I want to ask, in terms of the numbers where we need to be, it has been referred to us that there's a lot of deliverables. There's no monetization, no values, no numbers being given to any of those. Force strength management, making more soldiers available. How much soldiers do we have currently available for military operations, and how much do we need? The same with each of those. We know that of the 59,000 that we've got at the moment, there's maximum about between 30 and 40,000 that we can maybe consider for deployment and for operations. And then we know that we have to use or make use of the reserve force, because even with those numbers, we cannot make use of regular force members. They are not at the fitness level, at the competency level where we need to deploy them. So in each of that, we don't see more soldiers are younger and cost less. Where is your scientific or calculations to support what you are saying? By only using words with the greatest of respect is not going to help us. Chairperson, I want to see and I want to challenge the department and Chief HR. You must give us scenarios. If we must reduce uniform members from 59,000 to 50,000, must you be able to cut, and what will the implications, practical and financial implications, be? How much will it be on 5,000, and how much will it be on 2,500? If we are need to cut, because somewhere we have to now make some more significant and drastic decisions, because the proposals is not forthcoming from the department, from the SANDF, or from the minister. And we cannot go on like this. We are average of 41. I recall a couple of years ago, we were about 42, 43. So somewhere along the line, we have lost age, and I do not know how we got there. Then I just wanted to check on slide 5. Just quickly on that one. You are showing the criteria for to be applied for MEM cases. Minister, I've got a number of soldiers where the MEM has been approved and they fall into that category. They are NCOs, they are between 50 and 58, they are long-term serving members, but the chiefs refuse to sign off their MEM exits. So this whole criteria seems to not be implemented across the board, but it is again selective. So you know, I cannot see how we will be moving forward from here. And my challenge to you is, you will have to give us scenarios where we can say this is a practical implication, this is the fitness levels that we need, this is the kind of personnel that we need and that we cannot do without. Because the bad thing, as the chairperson has said, that our economy is not stagnating. Our economy is going down. World economy is under pressure and there's no more money. And I cannot see, in the wildest of my dreams, I want to be optimistic. I cannot see in terms of this presentation, that we will cut any cost whatsoever. We will find ourselves in 2025 when maybe none of us will be here, and then there will be new excuses and new plans and new strategies. But this one is not providing us that. If we see, chairperson, what we have experienced in Germany, and you see what a progressive system looked like, then it's something that we can talk about. I am of the opinion, and you can differ with me, that this will not convince National Treasury to give us more money for cost of employees. This will not convince them that we will reduce numbers and cost of employees over time and improve our defense competencies by our personnel. So, Chairperson, I will stick to that, and I will give the others an option. Oh, the last one that I just wanted to ask. Leased officers, in that one slide, you have referred to the people that you are exiting or prefer to exit. And then you mentioned leased officers. It is NCOs, senior NCOs, and leased officers. What is leased officers? Is that officers in the lower ranks? Because I recall that our Minister Modise, is on record where she has said she has never in her life seen a defense force with so many one-star, two-star, and three-star generals. So we must not cut where we actually need soldiers, but we must cut where it is needed to cut. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. May I request that you take down the presentation, please? Honorable Reiter.
Chairperson, good evening. Thank you very much. Allegedly honorable, it hasn't been proven yet. Yeah, Chair, we normally start by welcoming the presentation, but I don't really. And I mean, so the presentation gives really broad strokes, and there's no detail. And I want to agree with Mr. Moran. So, you know, there's no numbers, there's no targets, there's no measurable anything in it. So at this stage, it's kind of a vague idea. But the reality is that it is so vague that actually, we may as well not have really have had the presentation tonight. And I heard what the minister said about, you know, this is kind of a warning shot or a first draft almost. And next year we'll have something that'll be a bit more, you know, closer to what the final product is, with more detail and so on. And I'm just concerned about the urgency with that, because, you know, we are finding ourselves, Chair, you pointed out, the country's in a difficult financial situation. The previous minister, in one of her rare moments of accuracy, mentioned that, you know, South Africa needs to decide Well, cabinet needs to decide what kind of defence force South Africa wants. And you know, we're still at that stage. We don't know what we want. And what we've been presented with here today is pretty much just a case of you're going to get more of the same, and we're going to panel beat a little bit. We're going to put together a fancy presentation. Maybe that'll get us, you know, get us a bonus, or not put our heads on the chopping block, and it'll buy us a little bit of time until next year. That's what I'm seeing right now, Chairperson. I'm not seeing anything that really provides a step change, because that's what we need. You need a step change. Fa'ana fa'ana pas was the drill instruction that we used to do. And, you know, you change the step and take a whole new direction and move on. That's where we are, Chair. That's what we need. And I understand the defense review and what parts of it we need to implement and can it be funded, et cetera, et cetera. But there's no urgency. We're not moving forward. And I think that one of the issues that we sit with here, and it's an analogy that I've used before, is that we've asked the turkeys to organize Christmas lunch. So whilst we're getting the generals and the senior officers within the Defence Force to tell us how they're going to call themselves, we're not going to get a good result. There needs to be kind of an external, there's a big role for the department to play here, and a big directional role in terms of what do we want the Defence Force to look like. And Mr. Murray is quite right. Do we want a bunch of 40, 39-year-old people, you know, who can sit around and play chess and talk to each other? Or do we want a bunch of young people that are able to go out and do the job that they've got to do, because it's an unpleasant job? And it takes vim and vigor and a fair degree of youth. You certainly need some of the older dogs in the picture that they can teach the youngsters the old tricks. And that can take the strategic decisions. But by and large, you need a young force. What we've seen here tonight does not give us that. So, Chair, I'm looking for the step change. I'm not seeing it. I hear the minister saying, you know, batting for next year. I get that. It's too slow. The money's being spent every month. The irregular expenditure is adding up. We're adding to that pile, not taking away from it. And we're pushing our country into further and further trouble. And we are taking the reputation of the South African National Defence Force and eroding it with every month that we're allowed to go by without making something that is workable and taking it forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. And Honourable Thabo Mutle.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and good evening. I don't want to start on a negative note, as I do not agree with the notion that seeks to suggest that the presentation on the strategy is vague and does not necessarily provide direction as to how the department is going to go about the implementation of the strategy. However, Chair, I have a clarity seeking question on some areas. One, I would agree with those that says we want a force that is fairly young, that will be able to execute the mandate as and when required without fail, without any other challenge that might come as a result of an aging force. And of course, we understand, we must not behave as if we do not understand the challenges that that National Defence Force is faced with. In fact, we all know that they are held at gunpoint to reduce this force to a particular number, which is a discussion that we should undertake some other day to say, is it really assisting to impress on the South African National Defence Force to reduce its numbers after scanning the environment in the continent with the emergence of coup d'etats in the neighboring countries, so forth and so on. It's a discussion for another day, Chair. But the clarity that I would like Chief HR to provide is around them implementing this strategy versus rejuvenation. I mean, if they scan the environment, made the analysis that as and when they are allowing people to exit, does it balance with recruitment? For an example, if you let loose or you let go of certain members, whether voluntary or in terms of attrition, so forth and so on, are you able to balance it with the recruitment drive to ascertain us that in future we will not have a challenge where the focus is on exiting members and in future we find ourselves in a situation where we've got a force that is focused on exiting members and there is no members, sufficient members coming in to replace those that have exited the system? Because I don't think it's something that we should be excited about. In fact, as and when we do this, we must be intensifying our fight against the National Treasury on the instruction that they've given the Defence Force. Insofar as I'm concerned, that's where we must take the battle, as opposed to impressing on the Defence Force to further reduce. And of course, in terms of rejuvenation, we all agree that those that exit as a result of attrition, it's fair that should be done, but we must always ensure that there is young blood joining the force to ensure that it's rejuvenated and it's able to perform its duties effectively and efficiently. But I'm totally opposed, Chair, and it's my view. I'm totally opposed to this reduction of a force versus the looking at the population growth and the statistical result that have been issued by statistician general in the recent past. It tells us a lot, and we need to be able to take guidance from those statistics and be able to influence correctly and put the stop to this instruction from Treasury to impress on the Defence Force to reduce its force. In fact, if there's anything we should be doing now, is to take this battle to the Treasury to say, given these numbers that have been released, we can't continue reducing. We need to recruit more, and more funding must be made available to make it possible. But my last question or clarity seeking question, Chair, is with regard to one of the slides which talks about contract-based employment, which will be implemented versus the lifelong employment, which the department intends to phase out. My concern around that is how is the department intending to do that? And to what an extent have I want to believe, I think I've heard that there's a union of members in uniform. To what an extent have they engaged unions around these changes that they are going to to implement. The reason why I'm asking, Chair, is that to avoid a situation when they are now at an implementation phase and there's a revolt from UNON because moving from long-term employment into contractual-based employment, it's something that the UNON will not agree easily to. And I don't think it will then give hope or encouragement to those that do want to dedicate their life into serving our nation in uniform, because if they are in contract, their future is not secured with the force, and it might create problem in terms of recruitment going forward. So have they looked into those issues? Have they consulted enough? And what were the consensus or the outcome of those consultations insofar as these changes that they want to bring is concerned? I think for now, Chair, I will pause there and await. If there's a follow-up, I'll come back. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Petle, and then Honourable Shalem.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity, and good evening to everyone on the platform. Good evening, Minister. Chairperson, I think one should also echo the same sentiments that we welcome the report briefing that for one, I think it went to detail. And I would urge this meeting not to throw the baby with the bathwater. Because if we do that, we will lose focus to help us this meeting as to what should happen and how best the HR department should go by with the strategies where we think we should punch holes, then we just outrightly reject, which I think Honorable Mutle has said it mouthfully so. Our responsibility is to ensure that we help them, not attack the report that they brought to us for some help, because it's part of our responsibility to do that. I heard Honorable Mare Chairperson saying he's having a particular information, which I think it was going to be better if he put this on the table in this meeting. We're able to find a way. How does it synergize, or what synergy can be brought into place to ensure that the info that is having and the info that is brought openly in this document or presentation, they brought together and we find something that can help to ensure that the challenge that we are all faced is going to be dealt with, and the remedy out of that documentation will find help. Taking cue from what Honorable Mutle has said, as in when you consult, you must have put everything into place that will find an expression that becomes positive for everyone who wants to get into that. We should not find an element while we bring labor at the tail end, because that's where maybe we may find a resistance out of that. Where I don't agree with Honorable Mare is when maybe he can come back again to help me if he does not, why he does not understand the stagnation part of it. And I think it's something that was thoroughly explained into my mind, that if a particular grouping, as and when a promotion goes, that particular group of promotion It's not going out, but it's only bringing in members. And then that does not go openly without any financial burden into that. And I think it's appropriate for the HR to find that kind of a grouping or that kind of a category of employees becoming more financial burden to the department. And we need to find a creative way when we talk to those who are presenting to us so that they should also have that courage when they make preparations and they do their work diligently so. And they must find a way that as and when we get there, we're not going to find stones on our head because whatever they present to us, they've presented to the minister. And I think the minister also find it appropriate for them to have done the work diligently. The responsibility of this meeting is to help and put more positive notes on it so that we all are owning this particular baby. We should not distance ourselves. We should not find others distancing themselves, but we should find rather all of us making meaningful inputs on it. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shadembe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I don't like, maybe please bear with me. There's something that maybe may touch you, but please accept stop me if you're not happy. Chair, I think the other day, I was with you walking towards, the NSOP building. Then we met the minister, Minister Finance, and then he said to us, we said, why are you not helping us with the Department of Defense? We are struggling in terms of the finance. Can't you help? Then he said, can't we meet with our minister? And he said, he's available to meet with our minister. I'm checking maybe if you do have an information that, the Minister of Defense was able to meet with him and to see what was the outcome of the meeting. Because to me, it seemed at the time when we met him was like the minister is not, meeting with him. And then the second one, Chairperson, is the issue in the defense, when it comes to the budgeting. I don't understand, how they do their budget, whether it's a zero budgeting or it's taken from what has been happening in years. Because if we say we need to tighten our belt with regard to, the constraint, financial constraint, it means now we have to start from scratch, to say, look, we had this budget before. Now we're not talking about an increase to add on what we have. But what we have, how do we reprioritize, in terms of what we have. Look, Chairperson, I'm not, moving out of, the discussion, but if you look, the money or the problem with, the failure to comply with the systems, especially when it comes to procurement policy, it tells you that, there's a lot of money that's going out that can help to assist in the compensation of employees. I don't know maybe they can tell us, when it comes to defense, how do they budget? Is it a zero budgeting or is just, the budget based on what has been happening in years before? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, colleagues. I'm not too sure if we still have another hand. Right. I'm not too sure how the department is going to approach this one, but I don't think we are on the same page with them. The item on the agenda, it's asked. We asked them to give us a presentation. On their exit strategy, insofar as it helps the defense force to rejuvenate. It's not about the force design. The minister said already they're looking at the defense, they're reviewing the defense review. Only then the issue of force design will feature prominently, because they will be looking at what type of force do we require as a country. That will serve both the mandate and fit within the budget that is been made available to the Defence Force. So that is coming. I think the minister has committed herself to that. And this discussion today is not about that. But we wanted the department to give us comfort that as they implement the separation or the exit strategy, they are looking at the rejuvenation of the force. We have said it before in this committee that rejuvenation will save us money and will bring the median age of the force, and will ensure that we have a fit for purpose defense force. So it is in that context that we asked them to come and present today. But I can see that in your presentation, colleagues, you seem to have looked at matters that we have not asked them to present on today. I will welcome a proposal that says, let's invite the department back just to talk to us and about the ideas they have towards reviewing the force design. But I thought that discussion, in my view, would be premature, because that is part of the review that the minister was promised and has actually instructed, in fact, the department to start to look at. So basically, I'm saying that this is a narrow view. There's a narrow view versus a wider view. So we need to make a call and not ask them to, we not say to them that the presentation in actual fact does not address the areas that the colleagues have started to talk to or to speak about, because they belong to a wider view, and that start to speak to restructuring the force as a whole. But I'm not replying on their behalf, but I was just saying that we may fall into a trap of thinking that we are discussing the force design, when in fact we are just looking at the exit strategy as it helps the defense force to rejuvenate. I've said what I've said my 1 cent worth. I now invite the department to respond. I don't know who must I start with.
Okay, I will start. I know the minister will come later to wrap, if the minister allows me.
Okay, Chief Ashar.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Chair, members of the Joint Standing Committee. Chair, I think you hit it on the nail in terms of the expectation of us being here and what we thought we are going to be presenting to this forum. As I indicated when I started, I said this is a concept, and then it's a broad concept. It's a concept that now is about the what to do in taking into consideration the situation that we are in. This is the what that we presented to the Joint Standing Committee. The how has not been presented, because the how is what we're still going to appreciate. And if you recall, Chair, I did indicate to say we will still go through all the forums to discuss. And in those forums that we are going to be discussing will obviously discuss the how to do it, not the what. The strategy is a broad concept. And the question that actually we're coming most of, especially from Honorable Marais and Honorable Reinders, I think we'll talk mostly of the what, but I'll try to talk on one or two in anticipation of where we want to go. But let me start with your one, Chair, Honorable Chair, in terms of the break even, in terms of the current underfunding in the 2025-2026 that we anticipated that we will be able to break even. You correct, and your session, Honorable Chair, is correct. When we came with the interventions, we were not anticipating the current cuts by National Treasury, which is a serious concern again to us. We did not also, and we're talking here, the 10% cut, but we also did not anticipate that National Treasury will not be able to fund the annual increments, which normally always used to be funded by National Treasury, and the pay progression used to be funded by National Treasury. So currently, with the current situation, the country fund itself, National Treasury, and it's not only the Department of Defense, it's all the department that National Treasury used to fund the increase of every single department in terms of, you know, general increments and pay progressions. We understand very well that the money will not be coming from National Treasury. National Treasury has already authorized that we reprioritize. What does it mean? When we reprioritize from what that we don't have in terms of the general increments, etc. So there is nothing to reprioritize from the department, and that creates a challenge for us. And we set as a collective, especially from HR, and said, if the already unions already set and say they will be, and the resolution was signed with all the unions to say pay all those increase, and you say you're not going to pay for the Department of Defense, understanding that all the other departments are facing the same situation, what will it do to our people in terms of the morale of our people? And we felt that it is going to be a difficult decision for us to make not to pay all those in increments that were authorized through all the resolutions where all the unions signed. So we're in a serious predicament. Our increments in terms of salary increments are over 2.4 billion annually. That money was not forecasted when we started with our own interventions, because we always knew that this money is coming from Treasury. So to answer your question, Chair, in terms of the break even part of 2025-2026, we can safely say it might still be a challenge, depending on how many people we exit now. And after we paid all the severance packages, et cetera, and how many people we bring in the system, we will have to make new projections in terms of where we are going to be in 2025, 2026. Our plan did not factor this part, unfortunately. So I just wanted to clear this issue, Honorable Chair, to say we might not be able to break even because of what I just alluded to. All things that, if they were equal, we felt that this is where we were going to go. The questions raised by Honorable Marais, what is the real purpose? Is it the decrease cost of employees or to reduce the numbers? This is a balancing act in terms of the intervention that we have put to the Joint Training Committee of Defense a few years ago when we came with the interventions, also the Portfolio Committee of Defense, where we have been clear that you can reduce at a certain level in the DoD. You cannot reduce after a certain number or level of personal strength in the DoD. When we came with the 73,000, and we still maintain, Honorable Chair, members of the Joint Standing Committee, to say we believed that, that this 73,000 strength of the department can actually get us somewhere. But additional responsibility has been given to the military. I think we all have been aware now with the challenges and the threats internally, illegal mining, you know, we can mention all of them. I think Joint Standing Committee of Defense is aware of those issues. The military get called at short notice. We need to prepare for that. And we are already heavily involved in internal operations, in assisting the police, etc. So those requirements, they keep on coming on a regular basis. Even now, we are supposed to be deploying until March next year, even I think until June for illegal mining. We were not planning these activities. And as a military, when we've been given a responsibility, we jump and we go and do what our commander in chief and the country expects of us. It is difficult from the military side. And I'm hoping that members of the Joint Standing Committee will understand that the numbers now of that we always thought might be the number that we need is already under appreciation. And we had a work session in June and also in August with the chief. And we looked at all these internal challenges and threats. And we still believe we might require more than what we have deployable soldiers, I mean, now in this case. So we appreciate things from the perspective. As to whether we can go lower than what we have, you know, discussed even before, or what we believe we can still cut to fit into compensation of employees, it's going to be difficult to make those type of decision. If we did not have this type of challenges, probably it was easy for somebody to say we can still cut and cut and cut until we get into within the COE. But I don't think that was the purpose. The purpose is still to position the military to be able to do what is expected of the military. And when the country required the military to be somewhere else and deal with the issues and challenges of our country, the military is there to do that. We are already in a difficult situation in terms of our own assets. And yes, the budget that is allocated to us is also not assisting us. But then enough soldiers on the ground probably is what we require more than any other thing now, if we look at it in that context. So for me, it's not about cutting until you get to the COE. It's also about the balancing act. What is that that we are expected to do as the military? And should there be a challenge in our country, the military should be ready to deploy at short notice. I think that will talk to the first question that Honorable Ray has indicated, also in terms of the reduction of soldiers. In terms of stagnation in ranks, why we say it will obviously assist. We believe that the people that are stagnated in ranks, if they reach the top notch and they know there is no prospects of promotion for them, the military run a pyramid structure. Our structure means that the higher you go, the less posts they become. Not everybody will be promoted to the next higher rank level, even if they do perform at a satisfactory level. It's not that when you reach stagnation in terms of rank, you are redundant in the military. Yes, probably there might be one or two, but most of the people are still performing at that rank. But the level of morale, when people know that I've reached stagnation, I cannot be career plateau, I cannot be promoted further, the morale of a person will always go down. And we have seen it in our military. We have seen our people not wanting to, you know, be as active as they were because they feel that they're not going anywhere. And it's always difficult to motivate those people if they come, especially the high performers that cannot be promoted. What will this, why when we're saying we're exiting these people that have already got to the stagnation, we say if there is money and the people are willing and then you not put them in a difficult situation where they can already start being destitute and spend their money and they don't have money, because we also don't want to exit people that will actually just go and be jobless, but they don't have monthly pension that can sustain them in their lives until probably God calls them. We believe and we still want a strategy that says to our people, we want to exit you, but you are going to be looked after until, you know, you come to the stage where you have to, you know, go to wherever all of us believe we are going to go after our time in this world. We don't want to risk to put people on the street. I don't think that's the nature of our strategy. So those issues are key for us. And that's why the permanent exit strategy have to talk on those issues. How do you look after these people once they leave the military? And they must leave knowing that you also are looking after them. But the fortunate part is that if you exit at that level, higher rank level, we've made an analysis in the scientific approach that Odama Mare was talking about. If it was quite easy for us to do, because you look at the salary of a certain rank level, and you take that salary of that particular, let's say, brigadier, major general, and you know if it is at this level, how many privates you can appoint with that salary of those people, and how long these privates are still going to be at the lowest rank until probably corporal, sergeant, before they even exit or come to pass the salary of that particular general. And we can confirm that with one brigadier, you can appoint around 8 to 10 privates. And for us, that is rejuvenation. If you bring those young people in that are still energetic and they can go and deploy, and you sacrifice a general that was stagnated or a colonel that is already reached a career path too, and appointed at that rank level, you are in the process of rejuvenating. So for us, rejuvenation talks about that particular issue. The strategy, as I indicated, is not talking about the what, I mean the how, it's about the what. We still need to sit as a military command council. As I indicated, we have not really set and appreciated the how. To say, are there possibilities of certain posts in the military to be deleted in the highest, I'm talking about the highest rank, to augment the lowest? And we believe that there are certain posts from HR now that probably we can sacrifice to augment the junior ranks in the future, if we objectively look at certain rank levels and the responsibilities in those rank levels, we believe from HR's perspective that can be done. But it's not to reduce the number of people, it's to rejuvenate at the lowest ranks so that the people at least those junior that are coming are deployable in health and fit soldiers that can be deployed at any given time. I think that will address most of the issues that raised by Onamabaya, because it touched on stagnation, it talks about, you know, the soldiers, etc. But I think the scientific part of it, we can go further than that. And then I just want to say also from Honorable Reda, because it was touching on what Honorable Mare was saying, I think probably some of the concerns that he raised would have been addressed from this explanation that I just made to yourself. I will now move to Honorable Mutle, Chair, if you allow. It was just on the issue of the contract-based employment, the LTS. I can confirm, Honorable Mutle, to say we have dealt with this issue and we have implemented it since 2004. When we started with the HR 20 strategy, 2010 strategy, the intention was always to not appoint people until they retire, until the age of 60. And that has already been implemented. And even if you can recall, in 1994, when we integrated, we had what we call the short-term service system and the medium-term system. It was a contract-based system. So the intention of not affording people a long-term service has already been implemented since 1994. And the unions are aware about this issue because it's always been there. All the members that are belonging to the unions are part of this process. So the discussion between us and the union on this particular matter, I don't think it's a serious issue because it's what we are already doing and we've been doing for many years. I think that's that. And on a particular, I've taken note of your input and we appreciate your inputs and supporting us on what we're doing. And we appreciate your inputs. And thank you, General Richards. Do you want, as a planner, to talk on Honorable Shembe in terms of Shembe on the issue of the budgeting as a planner? If you can touch on that one, I think we'll have addressed all the questions.
Thank you, Chief Human Resources, the Chairperson of the Joint Standing Committee of Defence, the Minister of Defence and the Deputy Minister and members of the Joint Standing. I too would like to express the gratitude for the commentary and the advice that the Joint Standing Committee has provided this evening. When it comes to the budgeting, the Department of Defence really go out of its way to do accurate forecast of the number of personnel and the cost of personnel projected into the system. And what must be critical about the HR budgeting process is that it is based on a corporate HR plan, which is informed by guidelines by government and internal guidelines emanating from the minister, the Secretary of Defense and Chief SANDF. So it is not a finite zero-based budgeting process, but it is a process based on the governing guidelines issued for the MTA, MTSF, and it follows a progression of what the requirements for capacity of the department and the South African National Defence would be given what we know. And I think that we have employed systems to be able to support the development of our corporate HR plan. And we do submit to the DPSA our corporate HR plan for evaluation. And annually, it has been accepted for its compliance as well as for its accuracy. And I thank the Honourable Member for his question. Thank you very much. That concludes my response.
No, thank you very much. I will then ask the minister to come in. I'm happy, Chief HR, that you are saying that perhaps you need to review the projections. Because 2025-2026, in view of the current situation, the fiscal environment may not be achievable. And as you know, the ground is shifting and it impacts on the assumptions that informed the projections you had at the time. And I thought I should just raise that so that we work on correct assumptions all the time. And we don't have expectations and that are not going to be met because of the projections are no longer what the were projected at the time because the target has shifted. It's a moving target. So all the time, we must keep our eye on this target. and so that we are then able to review our strategies from time to time as well. I will now open up the opportunity for the minister to comment. Honourable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. I think Admiral Kuhu and Dr. Richards have dealt with most of the questions. I'd like, through you, Chair, to ask Dr. Mare to share the list of the people who have applied and who are being denied MEM with me, so that we can see where the trouble is. I can assure you that when the list comes, at least the first list, we sat around and it was a question from me to the HR that the members have considered carefully that they really want to participate in the MEM. The second question was, how strategic are they opposed that you allow them to leave at this point? Because even though you want to deal with the cost of employment and bring it down, you don't want to lose critical skills unless you know that as this one steps off, there is two down the line that can step in. So you don't want to create that. So I'd like to have a look at the list that that MRA has so that we can see what is going on there. I would also want to say that I agree completely, I don't agree with us putting pressure for us to bring the defense as quickly as possible below the figures, the numbers that will not enable defense to really be able to defend this country. It would be unstrategic for us to keep on tottering with what we are told, cut. For now, we agree with the cuts because we want to rejuvenate. Because what it also means is that, as Dr. Kubu has said, as you lift one of the top earners, you can bring in almost a dozen of the lower ones. But we also argued, Dr. Kubu, that you do have policies within the defense. Of the new dozen that comes in, at the point where they are supposed to graduate and become real members of the defense force, you can already see who are going to be the sluggers, and you keep watching. We need to be rigid. And when I came into the defense, I actually thought there were no policies that could be implemented that would enable us to deal with the issues of stagnation. Now, it is Ndati Kubu's job to keep the staff morale high. It is my job to look at the morale, at affordability, at capability. So I am beginning to insist that those policies must be implemented, so that you do not have a large bulge on top and a large bulge at the bottom. Because if you have a large bulge at the bottom, you also are not inclined to go out and look for the skills as quickly as possible that you need, because those posts are filled, because we are very sympathetic, and because we don't want to see people in the streets. We have also spoken about looking at how then you make sure that even as they start leaving the system at NCO level, how do they keep an honorable life which is dignified for a service person? So we're looking at all that. Then Gadesha Lembe says he had a discussion with the minister. And therefore, I must account whether or not I have had a meeting with that minister. With all respect, Ndade Chairperson, I think this is out of order. Ministers are colleagues. Minister of Finance and I can meet anywhere. We can have a cup of tea and discuss business. we can discuss the weather. There are matters that we meet about, there are matters that we don't meet about. Do we meet? And I think it is that Mare who asked us whether we take the fight. We have taken the fight today on why and why not we should shrink the defense. We have taken the fight right back to cabinet on why we are unable and should not be forced at this stage until the financial situation has improved on deploying 22 antenna at the border. So you need to understand that you are not going to be able to get the minutes of every meeting which any minister meets up with Treasury. But when it is important, when it affects the well-being of the defense, yes, we meet. When that meeting forces me to come to the committee and report on it, I will do so. But when it does not, when it is outside the oversight purview of the committee, I will not do so, with all my respect, Chairperson. And I will continue to meet with the ministers, all ministers, as and when. One of the things that Ndate Kubu has referred to, which really does tinker with our budget, is that more and more as one, the economy is threatened, because you cannot sit back. The economy affects the standing of the country. It therefore starts interfering with our sovereignty as a country, and therefore we do get deployed. So we're getting there. But we have not planned for all of this, and therefore, sometimes it means you divert from what you already have budgeted for to go and do what you need to do. And you expect that you will be recompensated, but sometimes you don't get a cent back. And that is another thing that needs to be taken in. And therefore, it doesn't matter whether defense is accurate in zero budgeting. Yasihlula ngisase parliament chair, zero budgeting. We want to go that route. But in fact, the Treasury sometimes, I think, is not prepared for that, because they focus, they divide what little they have in front of them. And sometimes it is a problem for them to meet up with all of us. And therefore, they see how much they can afford on the little that they have been able to make there. So we can't always whip them also, because Nati, we need to be looking at the economic activities, how much we are getting into the kitty, and how Treasury is trying to be able to meet up with each and every need of all the different needs of this country. So I would say that, yes, we take the fight there, but we must also not think we are the only children. If you go back, Chair, over the last 10 years and just look at what the budget cuts have cost the defense, you will be amazed. It runs into tens of billions. And we need to be able to claw back. And clawing back can only happen when we look at our own structures, we focus correctly, we take time to look at our own weaknesses. It is not just about bringing the cost of employment down. It is also about re-looking at defense and all the other new challenges that are facing all the defenses. Should we train the way we have always trained? I don't think so. The world is changing. The threats are changing. Even our region is changing. So every year, it seems to me that you need to be looking at your priorities. You need to be readjusting from your perception of yesterday into today's and project that into the future. So yes, Chair, we are hearing you. So far, this minister that Ndate Shelembe says I'm not meeting is very sympathetic to the defense. So far, we can have a meeting. So far, we can argue about our needs, and he will do whatever he can. But he is not able to meet all our needs, Chair, and therefore, it is also prudent on our side to look at our policies, our systems, what we have now, what we can change, what we need to bring in to rejuvenate. And rejuvenation we must do. One of the elements that we must seriously look at is the point of entry and the point of exit. We are one of the defenses where you still leave people to go home at 65, at 60. Not so in most of the defenses. And therefore, those adjustments are not pleasant to discuss, but those are what we need to be focusing into the future and to say, into the future, this is our entry age, this is our exit age. And this is where you exit in the lower rank, and this is where you exit in the middle ranks, and this is where you exit. And that might be able to enable us to rejuvenate faster. We need to be looking at how other defenses that came after us are able to be so agile that we are not. We are cumbersome because sometimes we overthink, we overplan. And when you overplan without the finance to back you up, you end up not achieving. And when you don't achieve, you then hear what Honorable Ryder is saying. We're just sitting there, wasting time, nothing is happening. It's not so. We're applying ourselves, we're looking at the problems from both sides. And I think if you are the chief of the defense force, you even lose hair because every problem comes to your doorstep. You must solve it. So I would say that yes, when we are ready, we are hoping that we, within the family thinking lot of that defense review, the rejuvenation will be part of the thing that we really prioritize, Chair. The age of entry, the age of exit, what type of training we want, what, how you reconfigure your own structure, that is what we are focusing at. What are the new challenges? Can we meet them? What do we need to cast off? What within the arms of services can you afford to shrink, and what must you magnify? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, colleagues. We can leave it at that. And I think it's confirmed tonight that the exit mechanism is to ensure that we are able to feed the army from the bottom, your rejuvenation, and that maybe with one post you may get you know, half a dozen or to a dozen new more corporals. So I think that's where we are living at. It's not aimed at reducing the force, and but is aimed at ensuring that we have an agile force, a force that is fit for purpose, because it serves no purpose, no point to have soldiers that you cannot deploy because they've reached a ceiling and they have passed the fitness test levels. But of course, that must be managed in a manner that is you know, is humane, and it takes into account you know, the softer issues, as it were. We are human beings. And the manner in which we get treated must be consistent with our human rights and the humanity. I'm happy that even as we exit, but we still pay them until they reach the age of retirement, but they miss on the adjustments that you know, those allowances that you know, they get as they remain within the force. So I think we can leave it at that for now, and then thank the minister and the chief HR and as well as the General Richards for their presentation tonight. And the minister, we will then move to the next item, that is the deployment letter. There is that we've received a letter of employment that seeks to extend the deployment of soldiers that were tasked to attend to ESCOM matters, and at a cost of over 100 million rand. I'm looking for this letter now, JCD. Let me read the letter the letter. This serves to inform the National Assembly. It's a letter from the President. This serves to inform the National Assembly that have extended the employment of 880 members of the SNDF for service in cooperation with the police for the prevention and combating of crime and maintenance and preservation of law and order in the Republic of South Africa under Operation Prosper. Members of the SNDF employed will continue to work in cooperation with the SNDF to protect and safeguard national key points and strategic infrastructure in the energy sector, ESCOM power points in brackets, under Operation Prosper for a period 18 October to 2023 to 31st March 2024. The extension of this employment is authorized in accordance with the provisions of Section 201, Subsection 2A of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, read with Section 19 of the Defence Act. The expenditure expected to be incurred for this employment amounts to 111 million rand, 111 million rands. And I will communicate this report to the chairperson of the National Council of Provinces. I kindly request that you bring the contents of this letter to the attention of members of the National Assembly. And the letter has been referred to us. I want to repeat the figure is 111 million rand. Otherwise, I will cause myself embarrassment. All right. That being the case, but my only question, the minister can assist, is whether there is funding to back this up, new funding to back this up. It's 111 million, we're told, and how will this money be? How will the SNDF be compensated? Is it new money from Treasury, or is money that will be recovered directly from ESCOM? I'm not quite certain if those discussions have been held with the responsible. But I want to say one or two things on this. Mr. Raider, sorry, I saw your hand first, and then Mr. Murray.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry. Just a question is an exit strategy? Is this going to continue for the foreseeable future? Or, at what stage is SAPS going to be able to take back this role?
You mean the exit? We've moved in, and you're asking what is the exit strategy?
Indeed, Chair. How are we going to get out of this, or is this going to go on forever into the future?
Okay. No, thank you very much. I think the question is noted. My sorry, it's just that your line wasn't that clear, Mr. Rader, but we now have gotten the point. Mr. Marais?
Thank you, Chair. It's just a follow-up or addition to what you've mentioned, and that's about the money. You know, if this is in the budget, approved budget, obviously I've got no problem with that. And I think we are quite used to you know, the assistance from the Defence Force, irrespective of the difficult circumstances and budgetary constraints. So I haven't got a problem with that in principle. My only concern is the budget, because we know that if, like in the past, they say no, fund it out of own budget, then we need know it's again stealing from Peter to pay Paul. And we know that we are in a very precarious position, that we cannot really afford that. So that is very important for me. Thank you. I can get confirmation or feedback from the department or the presidents in that regard. All the-
yeah, thank you very much. And I know that in other countries, you know, when there is to be a deployment, there is a special appropriation that comes with it. In this case, we wait for the minister to adjust the budget. But as to whether we will get it from this adjustment, that's the question that begs the answer for now. Honourable Minister, you may want to say one or two words.
You are right, Chairperson. In our case, you wait for the adjustment. You use what you can. Sometimes you get into a bilateral agreement with the department that is responsible. You then wait and wait and wait for repayment. You don't get the repayment, you get the bad audit, and it goes on and on. But in this particular instance, we have no option. We have to stay there, because it is not just about ordinary kids playing around. Some of the installations are actually destroyed deliberately. Some are actually taken away. And therefore, for us, it becomes a matter of whether we have the money or we don't have the money. South Africa's economy, South Africa's people must be protected, and their properties must be protected. And so we are engaging continuously with Treasury on this. Just like I think Chief HR spoke to the Zamazamas, we are on standby. We will go in there because it is former military men who are underground here. It is not ordinary people. They call us out. So we are on standby to go in anytime, because the type of weapons they use are terrible. What they do to women that they kidnap and take underneath there is terrible. So it is war under our down there in our minds. I can say to you, I'm not sure whether we will get all the money back that is owed to us on the deployment, but I can also assure you that once the commander-in-chief says you are therefore deployed, we have no option but to jump in. We will engage with the Treasury on this one. As I say, the minister does try to meet us halfway where he can. And I'm quite, having been around for quite a while, Chairperson, he's one of the few that really listens to us. And when he says no, we know it is because he really can't help us. So I'm not going to try and get money out of a stone, but I know that he is sympathetic when we come and approach. We are engaging him on another issue, which has to do with employment issues, and he's putting his head to it, and we will have another meeting, and he can see how he meets us halfway. So It is what it is. We do not have this money. We have not budgeted for it, but we will be on deployment. We will see where we will get reimbursed so that not all our plans fall apart. But if we don't also deploy and South Africans say, what are they doing in there? It is another finger pointing at us. So it is better to sometimes go in and be damned rather than not go in there and still be damned. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. Colleagues, I guess we are done with this. It's an extension. Colleagues, is there any objection to giving concurrence to this extension? I know there's
no objection.
No objection. Thank you very much. So our concurrence was sought and is granted. Thank you very much. Colleagues, we can then now move to the last but one item on the agenda. We have received an invite from, what is this now? Or from Milko. Yes, I didn't see the thing. Milko is saying it's good day. Milko has achieved the first flight of the Milko 380 unmanned aerial vehicle, which is the highest category of unmanned aerial vehicles in the world when considering military use of UAVs. This is the highest achievement in unmanned system for South Africa. The aircraft has been developed in South Africa by 100% South African skills and investors. And this achievement brings a complete independence, unmanned military technology for South Africa. We believe, however, that our achievement can only be sustainable if it is supported by the Parliament. We would like to formally invite the Joint Standing Committee on Defence to our factory in Cape Town to introduce our efforts. And at a later stage, we would like to invite the Joint Standing Committee to Overberg Air Base to witness the flight of the Milko 380. I would like to propose the following dates, and then they mention the dates. Just go up, please. And these are the dates that they're proposing: Monday, 30th of October, November 13th, as well as Monday, the 27th of November. So we need to respond. Firstly, do we accept the invitation? If yes, which date do we propose? And so it's to be honest, this is the groundbreaking for a South African company to rank amongst the best in the world. It speaks to our sovereignty, sovereign capability as a country, and it's something we've been talking about that. Sometimes nowadays, you may need UAVs to complement the boots on the ground. The boots can't be everywhere, but the technology can give us the force multiplier. And colleagues, comments? Do you want to comment on this?
Chair, yes, from my side, if I may. Yes, fantastic. I think this is what we have been waiting for a long time. It is also this, we will recall that we have seen the concept one at the AAD, in Air Force Base Waterkloof, So this is what we what has made us incredibly exciting and excited. So I would say absolutely, if we can do that, it will give us insight. I think that that'll be much, much needed, especially going into the future. So yes, maybe 30th is just too short period. Maybe towards, we know that by the 27th, you know, all these BRRRs and budgets and probably our debates will be finished. So maybe towards the end of November would be my suggestion, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Willem, sorry, Dr. Jansen van Rensburg.
Chair, sorry for the interruption. Just maybe to assist members, the date for Monday, the 27th, I've just checked, and there's actually a planned oversight visit for the Portfolio Committee on Defence and Military Veterans from the 27th to the 29th to the Kimberley Military Area. That is still a proposed visit. Brian will submit an application next week. So if the application is not approved, then we can go on that date. But if the application is approved, then most members of this committee will not be available on the 27th.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right. And Honorable Mutle, thank you very much for that guidance.
All right. Thank you, Chair. On that note, or the information provided by Dr. Venadam, I think I will then propose that we use the 13th of November.
Okay. No, it's fine. So, colleagues, number one, there's acceptance of the invite. We'll write back to them to indicate our acceptance and then propose the date, that being the 13th of November. Thank you very much. I also understand that this one is not was not directed at us. We saw it in the media that the SNDF, the Navy, will be receiving and naming one of their vessels after King Shaka on the 27th of October, 2023. And I saw the list of guests, the senior Department of Defense leadership, members of KwaZulu-Natal Provincial Council, Maritime Industry and KPNs of Industry will be in attendance, and it is anticipated that the Zulu royal family will also be present. It's such a big function, and they will also be welcoming the delivery of the second of the three multi-mission inshore patrol vessels at the Salisbury Island. Well, this is not an invite, it's a media release. Maybe we can leave it at that for now, but would have loved to have been invited to witness the arrival of this. We've been talking about it, putting pressure for the delivery. When the delivery happens, we are not there to witness it. So I think that is the issue. We missed the first one, and we promised that we would not miss a second one. And no, we're not promised about the second one. We did raise some, concern that we missed the first delivery. All right, Minister, you may want to comment on that. It's late, it's tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, anyway, Chair, that
I may want to apologize for a non-invitation that has reached the committee. And I would say that without even consulting the powers that be in the military, it is within the mandate of the committee to see exactly the equipment and whatever that the defense does. So all the members can make it, let's make it.
Okay.
And all right. I want to just say I apologize that we did not send a formal invitation, Chair. My apologies for that.
No, thank you very much. Thanks, Minister. It was an oversight. We'll see how we juggle around. Even if one or two of us is there on our behalf, we'll be happy. But the committee would check, do a round robin via the group just to check who can be available tomorrow. Unfortunately, we are leaving at 11 for a study tour, for a visit to Lohatla. I think there's a catch-22 there. All right. So, but we'd have loved to be there, but looks as though it's going to be impossible. But we'll still, All right, let's leave it at that for now. I thought I should just raise it. Minister, I think we should thank the Deputy Minister and the team that you set through till this last item. The team will then remain behind to deal with the colleagues will then remain behind to deal with the minutes. Thank you very much, Minister. Your parting shot?
Just a big thank you, Chairperson. And that we will make sure that we will not lag behind again on invitations. Our big apologies. And even when that defense review process starts in earnest, we will expect the participation of the Joint Standing Committee. Otherwise, it will be a non-issue unless Parliament is on it, even catches it as early as possible, as we draw it up, comments and corrects, so that when we take it on the public platforms, we are all one. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. And thank you very much, DM, till we meet again. Colleagues, let's deal with the minutes. Our ministers?
Just one, Chair.
All right, colleagues, it's minutes of the 19th of October. So this is the attendance. Please check if you are well recorded there. And the attendance, right? And then just pass the attendance page. Yeah,
sorry, we can just stop there for a moment. It looks like Mr. Tlebekulu has been promoted to the NCOP based on that attendance list. But just a small correction there.
Okay. No. That is fine. I'm sure you'll be happy with that promotion. And the rest of it.
So not sure, Chair.
Where I am. Then page 2 for corrections. And page 3. Page 4. And the last page. Colleagues, on behalf of my colleague, the co-chair, I present the minutes for adoption. Thabo, your hand is up. Is it a legacy hand, Mutle? I think it is.
Colleagues, there is a legacy hand. I'll remove it.
Thank you very much. I present the minutes for adoption, colleagues. Can I get a mover?
I move, Honorable Chair.
Mata Bartlett moves. Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Honorable Alison Tembo seconds. Colleagues, thank you very much for your time. I think we've come to the end of the meeting. The meeting stands adjourned.
See you tomorrow.
Good night, Chair. Thank you.
Sure.